as we bring in Todd Furman. I'll tell you, Todd, today, man, I've got on our one of our great sponsors, Nut Dust T-shirts on. And walking down the hallway, I just realized that we're not in Vegas. My Nut Dust T-shirt would probably blend in out in Vegas. In a business setting up here, people in other offices looking at me going, what does he have on? And is there a company called Nut Dust in the building now?
I was going to say, it probably turns a lot more heads and garners eyeball attention in Birmingham, more so than you would walking up and down the Las Vegas Strip at 2 a.m. I think people would just kind of smile, nod. You might get a wink, and depending on what you're after, you might attract an interesting kind of clientele.
Furman, let me ask you this. You know, I'm kind of a contrarian, but, you know, I'm like you, man. I really study this stuff, and the first couple of weeks have been, you know, last Saturday or two Saturdays ago, week one, I was 5-6. Last Saturday was 6-7. I try to be really transparent with all of our viewers and listeners. How have the books done overall on the first couple of Saturdays?
You know, honestly, LT, college has kind of been a mixed bag of things. The books got their brains beat in week zero as favorites really feasted when you look at a team like UCLA that did real well. But as far as week one results, it depends on who you talk to. And I think it's always interesting because if you cater to more of a recreational bettor, you're struggling a little bit early on. Whereas if you're taking some of that sharper action, you're actually reaping the benefits from it on the college side. Now, as far as the NFL was concerned, Sunday was a banner day. The only real decisions that worked against the house were Sunday Night Football with your beloved Rams covering every number known to man with that 20-point victory. And then Monday night, because it's a sign of the times, the general public and professional bettors both came in on the Las Vegas Raiders. So it put a little bit of a damper on an otherwise great NFL weekend, but college, not exactly the windfall that books would anticipate early on.
Todd Furman, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. He is on the Pepsi hotline. I want to start with a West Coast game. When you see Clay Helton fired and USC is about to play Washington State, what do you in Vegas do with that? And what does the general public normally do when a team is playing a team whose coach has just been fired?
I think it adds a wrinkle to handicapping, trying to figure out if the players are going to use it as a rallying cry to go out there and resurrect their season, because you can't let one loss become two, because suddenly if you start out in conference play 0-2, that can be a daunting task and a mountain to try and overcome. But when you look at USC, I think the biggest question marks we had with this team not only were Clay Helton, but what they were going to look like on the defensive side of the ball. And to Stanford's credit, they went out there, took advantage, and were able to do what they wanted when they wanted. The bigger concern here, though, if you want to make a case for the dog, Washington State has shown me absolutely nothing thus far. They're going through a bit of a quarterback conundrum in their own right. And if we use their only game against FBS competition, not exactly a ringing endorsement for Nick Rolovich's team when you lose outright to Utah State as a 17-point favorite in your first game of the season.
You know, I look at Alabama, Florida, and typically Alabama seems like, you know, it's either lay it or don't play it. And this is one of those situations where Florida's got a quarterback controversy, and Emory Jones has not looked good, but it just seems like maybe in this spot it's too many points. It's come down to 14. It was at 15.5 at one particular time. Which way do you play this game?
You know, this is a game that I'm going to have to watch real closely. We actually did an in-depth breakdown on our Bet the Board podcast today. And from a core number standpoint, Florida is the value side at anything more than two touchdowns. Now, when you try and break down some of the X's and O's, I think you hit on the key question. What are we going to get from the quarterback position for Florida? For me, Emory Jones doesn't provide that vertical passing threat that you got from Kyle Trask. Florida's weapons offensively, other than Jacob Copeland, aren't going to make us forget what they had last year and Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney. I do think Florida is going to be better defensively. This game has been a sellout, and it could be a little bit of an overwhelming atmosphere for a young quarterback in Bryce Young. But if Florida finds themselves down like they did in the SEC championship game, will they be able to battle back? I don't think this offense has those kind of capabilities, and I do think this Alabama defense will be the best unit out there. For me, I lean under the total ever so slightly, but it's not really a game I'm running a tango with. Very curious to see how it gets bet, because if we do see this number trending under two touchdowns, it'll suggest that professionals have an appetite to back the home dog.
A prime time on the deuce, Tulane and Ole Miss. Tulane impressive in a loss in the opener. Ole Miss, I like what their offense and their quarterback. This does look like a tricky, interesting game. What do you like about this one?
Yeah, this is a game I actually bet earlier in the week, honestly. Went over the total at 73. It's now up to 76. I still think there's some value and opportunity. To Tulane's credit, they're doing everything they can to troll Ole Miss, talking about how they have more SEC championships to their credit than the Rebels have been able to accumulate. Lane Kiffin, I think, understands what he's going to encounter in Willie Fritz's offense. So this game, assuming that the weather is going to hold up and no reason to believe it won't in Oxford, I think could look like basketball on grass. I think this Tulane defense we saw struggle to slow down Oklahoma's passing game. I mean, they were gashed in the first half, and it was more the Sooners' ineptitude in the second half that really kept that game as close as what it was. But I think Tulane a little bit more dynamic, and I still have major reservations about what Ole Miss is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. Side perspective, lean towards the dog if I can get 14.5. But again, like the total over, I think you're going to be talking about both teams potentially in the 40s here.
Todd Furman is with us, former odds maker, Caesars Palace, bettheboardpodcast.com. He is on the Pepsi hotline. I don't have the fountains in my front yard or the free buffet or the cheap rooms to stay in. Vegas does. But when I look at Indiana catching 4 at home with Cincinnati, I feel like a lot of people have put way too much into that Indiana-Iowa game, which included some pick sixes. It kind of got out of hand quick on Indiana. I feel like you're getting great value with the Hoosiers at home.
If you told me Michael Penix was going to go out there and look like the healthy dual threat quarterback we've seen for glimpses during his time in Bloomington, I'd have no qualms at all making a case for the home underdog. Tom Allen was pretty outspoken and said, hey, we love the fan support we got from the student section last week in a blowout win against Idaho. The problem I have with Indiana is their biggest weakness on offense plays into Cincinnati's strength on defense. That would be the Indiana offensive line against the Cincinnati defensive front. And I think what's been interesting so far, when you look at Notre Dame's performance on the defensive side, Marcus Freeman doesn't have them buttoned up. Meanwhile, Cincinnati, obviously, Luke Fickell may have his fingerprints over that defense a lot more than we give them credit for. Desmond Ridder has a chance to burst onto the scene here and really catapult himself into Heisman discussion with a good game here and against Notre Dame. This number, normally you would see underdog money coming in from professionals. It's actually been the other way in this spot. Number opened at 3, it's leaking out to 4. For me, I can see making a case to go under the total, but I get the feeling this Cincinnati team wants to burst onto a national scene. I just don't trust Penix's knee enough to hold up under the duress he's going to face Saturday afternoon.
Furman, watching North Carolina week one against Virginia Tech, the offense looked horrendous. And then watching Virginia early morning against Illinois, Brennan Armstrong, going back to last year, this guy can play. I thought this number would be a lot skinnier. It's 8.5. That's why the public is all over Virginia. I find it hard to play North Carolina. I love playing favorites when the public's against that favorite, but in this spot, 8.5 seems like a lot.
Well, you mentioned Brennan Armstrong, and he really opened up my eyes last week, although I'll admit I had no idea that that game was scheduled to kick off at 8 a.m. Pacific time, so when it was 14-0 by 8:15, I went, what the hell is going on here? But this Virginia offense, I don't think got enough credit coming into the season. Now, this will be a much bigger test for them against North Carolina than what we saw against Illinois. But by that same token, what is going to be the real North Carolina? A team we saw that struggled to do anything in Blacksburg in their season opener on that Friday night, or a group that got healthy, albeit against an inferior defense in the form of Georgia State. I think this game, maybe more than any game that's not getting national attention, will be a better litmus test in terms of how conference races are going to shake out. I made the game 10, but I'm a little bit concerned. I'm higher on North Carolina, especially without Bo Corrales offensively. So for me, I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach here, but I'm going to look to see if these offenses can go out there and light up the scoreboard. I made the total in the game 68.5, so just don't have a ton of wiggle room unless it ticks down to 64.
Statement game for Auburn and Penn State. Can Auburn make a statement?
The biggest question I think Auburn fans are asking is, what are they going to get from Bo Nix? I mean, you guys know the narrative as well as I do that when Bo Nix leaves Jordan-Hare, he just hasn't been the same quarterback through his first two seasons. You look at the games where he thrived away from home. One came in 2019 against an Arkansas team that finished outside the top 80 in defensive efficiency. And then last year, of course, he had some success against an Ole Miss defense that struggled to slow down everybody. Now, if Nix can be good, more like what we saw against Akron in the season opener, the sky becomes the limit for what Brian Harsin's offense is going to do. Because from a backfield standpoint, I think Bigsby and Hunter are outstanding and going to create real problems for Penn State. The other side of it, you do wonder, Auburn, who have they beaten? Are they battle-tested yet, taking on two lightweights? We saw Penn State at their best, going on the road to Camp Randall, knocking off Wisconsin in their season opener. Six is a fair number. I like this game under the total, guys. I don't think we're going to see a ton of big plays. I think Auburn's defense has improved, and until I see Bo Nix go out there and put up crooked numbers and consistency, I think you go out there with a very conservative approach, and you wait for one of these quarterbacks to make a mistake. I'll go under 53.5.
BetTheBoardPodcast.com is where you go to get Furman's podcast. He's with us on the Pepsi Hotline. To the Monday night game, the Packers did not look good enough to give 11 points to anyone Sunday. They're doing that for the Lions. Did we just see the worst the Packers can play, or is this number a fishy one?
So I'm not big on the Packers. Let me get that out there in the open before we dig into this game. I'm not big on the Packers this season. I think there are reasons to be concerned about Aaron Rodgers and his level of focus, because one of the things that he attributed his success to a season ago was spending the entire offseason during the pandemic, going through, reviewing his mistakes, and rededicating himself to the game. 2 years ago, we were talking about Aaron Rodgers maybe potentially being done in terms of touching that ceiling for elite quarterback play. But in this spot, knowing that Green Bay was embarrassed, there's actually been line value created on a double-digit favorite, which is rare to say, because before we saw the Lions against the 49ers and Green Bay get embarrassed, that number would have been 13.5, maybe even touching two touchdowns. Now, interestingly enough, when you dig into some of the historical numbers here, this would be the first time a team is favored by double digits the week after losing by 20 points since 2018. When it happened to the Patriots back then, they ended up covering against the Jets as a 12.5-point favorite. But things get even stronger when you talk about a team losing by 30-plus points. Going back to 2005, teams favored by double digits after losing by 20 points the previous week, guys, 16-7 against the number, tells you line value has been created. Buy a low on the Green Bay Packers in a divisional game here.
Intriguing game late Sunday, Cowboys-Chargers. I backed the Chargers last week. Ryan Fitzpatrick goes out early in that game, but I was impressed with the Chargers, Joe Lombardi's offense. He got a little too aggressive late in that game. I don't know what you thought about that, but I think the Chargers will be able to move the football in the Cowboys. Obviously, Dak looked fantastic week one against Tampa. The total's 55. Do you lay the points with the Chargers here or play that over?
Yeah, this total actually opened a shade lower at 52. So you've seen a decent size move up through a couple of key numbers in that 54 and 55. And you talked about that Chargers offense. I think 20 points on the scoreboard was extremely misleading for how dominant they were. Now, the yards per play numbers won't blow you away. They were under 6 in that particular category. But they moved the ball at will against the Washington football team, consistently had to settle for field goals. And if they're able to turn those 3s into 7s against an inferior defense, I think this game goes flying over the total. My lean would be towards Dallas if it gets to 3.5, but I do think the over the more compelling play. But with the total having been bet up full game, the best angle available still, going over in the first half at 26.5. I'm not quite sure where these stops come from. The only way it loses if we're settling for field goals instead of scoring 7s.
Jason and several people in the chat room, Todd, says, that's not what I expected Todd to look like. We, of course, on video now with a screenshot of you up when you're talking. When's the last time you've been carded in Vegas?
You know what? I'm trying to think. It probably hasn't been nearly as recently as I would like. I'd prefer going into local establishments and going, hey, you look like you're under 30, but starting to get a little gray on the side, and I attribute that to my lovely fiance and a dog that have aged me prematurely.
Mm. And unders, playing the unders. That'll do it.
Well, unders, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you have to go through the nonsense in a Tulsa-Oklahoma State game that looked like it was going to be a rocking chair, I'm convinced that took multiple years off my life, but I guess I'm used to it at this point.
All right, listen, go to BetTheBoardPodcast.com, subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast, listen to it. Great information like you just heard from Furman, but much more of it. Follow Furman on Twitter as well, at Todd Furman on Twitter. Furman, we always appreciate the time. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, gents. Best of luck with your picks this weekend.
All right, buddy, you too. Take care. Todd Furman with us on the Pepsi Hotline.